Hey everyone, it's Colin. How's it going? So this is a topic that's come up frequently in the last several years, but we've seen a major development with it now. Apple has launched a self-service repair program, generally to, I think, get in front of concerns about right to repair, but there's a lot more than meets the eye with this one. So you've probably heard a bunch of other takes on this one, read articles about it. It's pretty big news, but I figured I need to throw my hat in the ring and offer my own take on what's going on and what it can mean. So this is a new program that's kind of an expansion of a previous one. Not terribly long ago, Apple announced a program for allowing independent repair providers to have access to parts and tools and information about repairing Macs. It was a program that third-party repair services and independent shops needed to apply to, and there were a whole bunch of stipulations about it. Like, they had to spend a certain amount of money to do so, they had to go through training and get access to all these tools and supplies, that sort of stuff. It was very close to becoming an Apple authorized service provider, but didn't quite go that far. It didn't make a whole lot of sense for small shops to go through that program because of how heavy of the requirements there were. I think it really was just a way to kind of make some people satisfied on paper, but in practicality, it was, well, some people considered the whole thing a joke. Apple has responded in kind by now expanding that program out to individuals, self-service repair, as just a single person, regardless of whether you're doing it as a service for someone else or just trying to repair your own device. Apple is now going to allow you to buy parts and tools and gain access to information to do those kinds of repairs yourself. And this made some big waves, not just in terms of the scope of it, but also the timing. And we'll get to that in a second here, but let's go through some more details about this program. The only information we've really gotten so far, and this is the biggest limiting factor in talking about this program and what it can mean, is really in just the form of a single PR piece that Apple put out as I'm recording this last week. They basically said that starting in early 2022 in the US and then expanding throughout that year to other countries, you're going to be able to buy parts for the iPhone 12 and 13, and then they'll eventually expand it into Mac computers that have Apple Silicon CPUs. The first thing right off the bat that people started to nitpick there was the products that you could buy parts for. They're all relatively new ones. The iPhone 12 and 13, like the oldest device of any sort within that scope of what they were talking about, is only a year old, right? The iPhone 12 was 2020's phone, and the Mac computers that they were talking about, Apple Silicon, they all came out late 2020 as well. So what about people with older devices? I mean, the whole point behind right to repair is to prevent people from having to go and, you know, throw those devices away or recycle them and upgrade to something new just because something broke. Now, there's two ways to look at this. One is Apple's just doing the lazy way out, and that is that, you know, when companies stock spare parts for devices, they don't have those manufactured separately, right? Like, you know, think about an automaker and looking at automakers and how they handle repair, both, you know, authorized and independent, is going to bring a lot of parallels to this new process that Apple is introducing. You know, when they manufacture cars, in general, they just take some of the parts that they use and build the cars with and set them aside as repair parts, right? As spares for selling to dealers for their own purposes or shipping to dealers for warranty repairs, that sort of thing. So since, you know, the iPhone 8, for example, or, you know, certain models of Macs with Intel CPUs are no longer being manufactured, Apple doesn't have this big stock of spare parts sitting around that they can then earmark for this self-service repair program. And, you know, if you look at it from a logistics perspective, obviously they've set aside a certain number of parts for those devices for their own use, not just for use like at Apple stores or the Genius Bar, but also for authorized service providers who are doing warranty repairs. Because a lot of some of those devices are still under like extended Apple Care warranties, right? So if you've got a MacBook Pro from 2019 that you bought Apple Care on, it's still covered. And if, say, the motherboard on it were to fail, you can haul it into an authorized repair center of some place, whether it's independent or a Genius Bar, and they're on the hook for putting a new motherboard in it. And Apple has, of course, as a big company, crunched all the numbers as to like what's the anticipated failure rate of all of the parts in their devices and allocating a certain percentage of those to be available for repairs. They're not going to manufacture extra millions of parts, because if they have a whole ton of parts, you know, like lots and lots of parts left over by the time the device is considered obsolete or no longer worth repairing, then they've wasted a bunch of money, right? So they're going to try and, you know, thread that needle in such a way where they've got enough parts to last the lifetime of the product, like the usable life of the product, but not have too many left over. So now if they were to suddenly expand into selling those parts to people, well, the numbers are going to get screwed up. Now, you could say that, okay, well, some of the people who would otherwise go and get authorized repair would do the repair themselves. And if the computer's out of warranty, I think that is the case. But, and this is really the crux of this entire program, I think the number of people who will actually engage in doing that, who will take on those repair tasks themselves, are a lot smaller than what some people are believing them to be. Not just because of the complexity of doing some of the repairs. I mean, we know Apple products are designed to be difficult, if not impossible, to fix, at least for certain failure modes. But they're also wide-ranging in terms of who has bought them, right? It's like we're well past the 90s, where if you're working on a computer or you own a computer, you're an expert in it. Like, everyone owns devices like this now, right? There are so many people out there who own iPhones who have absolutely no idea how they work. They just use the phone as intended, just as this personal communication device. They're not a nerd about it. Even if they could get access to the parts to do the repair, they wouldn't want to, just because it would be too daunting. They don't know how to do that. Some of these people literally don't even know how to use a screwdriver, let alone some of the specialized tools that would be necessary to pull off a repair like that. So, yes, the argument could be made that, well, okay, opening up the doors to all of these parts, you know, for older devices would throw off the numbers, and a bunch of people would go out and buy them to do self-repairs, and suddenly now there's this shortage for the Genius Bar and the Apple authorized service providers, and Apple's going to have to spend a bunch of money firing up old assembly lines to build new parts again. I mean, you could make that argument, but I wouldn't buy it. I think the reality of why Apple is limiting which devices it's going to offer parts for is really just kind of, well, they're paying lip service more than anything to this program. They've seen the writing on the wall when it comes to legislation in various places, not just in the US, but other countries, about right to repair. They're trying to get ahead of it because, at least in the US, there is no nationwide right to repair sort of doctrine yet. Some states have taken upon themselves to try to pass laws and requirements about manufacturers making parts and tools and whatnot available, but it's not a federal thing yet. And a lot of countries haven't gotten that far into like codifying those rules either. It's just something that's still being talked about and gaining momentum. So Apple's trying to get ahead of that. I think they figure by making a program like this available, then it'll kind of, you know, push that issue off to the side. Look, okay, fine. You win. We'll make the parts available. Now you don't need to legislate us. And is that good? Is that bad? It's a little bit of both. The problem with just doing that, trying to get ahead of the legislation, is now Apple is still kind of in control of how the program works. requirements aren't being pushed on it about how far back you have to make parts available, or what parts you have to make available, or what kind of tools and information you need to make available, or the big thing is the pricing of all of that kind of stuff. By getting out in front of this, and this is genius on their part, it kind of screws over some of the hardcore tinkerers and, you know, computer and technology nerds like us, but by getting out in front of it, because they've, in quotes, satisfied the requirements for right to repair, if there's no legislation or teeth behind it, now everyone's going to forget about the issue, right? In some ways, the right to repair movement has won, and Apple lost, and all of that in quotation marks. And now we move on to something else in our mindset, right? We look at the next thing that bothers us in technology circles. Okay, right to repair won. Everybody go home and do something else now. You know what I mean? Protesting can be done. The problem with that, of course, is, like I said, Apple's still in control of the terms of all of this. So if Apple decides that they only want to support products that are 3 years old and stop selling parts for anything older than that, well, they could do that. And I think, you know, by that point, because that would be several years out, momentum for right to repair, you know, in terms of people, you know, sticking it to manufacturers, getting them to do what we want, well, that momentum will have died off. Again, because right to repair, in quotes, won. And I think that's going to be really the big sticking point with all of this over the long term is, what are those terms going to be? Obviously, pricing is going to be a big thing. And I think it's pretty well understood that these prices for parts are going to be high. Apple isn't going to sell you a replacement screen for $50, right? They still want to have you go to one of their stores to get a repair done. And or they want you to continue to buy extended warranties. If it was cheap for you to go and buy the parts to repair your own devices, Apple would lose money. Even if Apple made a profit on selling the parts themselves, which undoubtedly they're going to do as part of this program, and even if they have to tack extra stuff on top of that, like you need a special tool in order to do the repair, or you need to buy a repair manual, or have access to a specific application or web service in order to do the repair, like with the whole serialization of parts, right? And screens on iPhones is really going to be the best example for this entire thing, because that's a part that commonly fails or gets broken that affects a lot of people. There's just a huge industry out there for dealing with screens on smartphones. And so if Apple were to sell those parts for cheap, they would be leaving money on the table, because they would much rather have you take your phone into the store, particularly at, you know, an Apple Genius Bar, and have them do the repair, because they make money then not just on the parts, but also on the time spent replacing that part. Apple can do all the hand waving it wants about, oh, well, make sure you get genuine parts and, you know, proprietary tools and knowledge and, you know, we can do it right, high quality repair and it's not dangerous or blah, 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 whatever. The fact is Apple makes money off of repairs, and that's not an Apple only thing, right? You take your car into the shop to get something fixed, of course they're going to make a profit on that. In fact, dealers make profit when warranty repairs get done, because the manufacturer will reimburse them not just for the parts that they used, but the time that the technicians spend in the shop fixing that problem, right? There's a set rate that they get paid. So warranty work can be profitable for, you know, independent, or I should say, like, you know, franchised operations in the case of the auto industry. With Apple, that's the same thing. If you take your computer or your phone into an authorized service provider, that authorized service provider will make money doing a warranty repair. So even if your device is under warranty, Apple still wants you to, you know, go through their services, because they better control the process and they don't want you to just buy the part. So what else? I mean, the big thing about limiting the scope of parts, and I think, like I said, part of it is Apple wants better control over the process and they don't want people necessarily going out there and fixing up their old stuff. I think it's obvious that Apple's going to continue to push people to just buy a new thing or go in for authorized repair. Because if you go in for authorized repair, then someone can be like, look, for real, this phone is 3 years old. Just go buy a new one, right? Especially if the repair prices are high. But I think it's also, and this is another kind of scary thing to think about, since Apple is now offering these parts, there's no incentive for them to not make devices unrepairable anymore, right? Now, Apple has been heading a little bit more in the direction of trying to make their devices easier to repair, but it's baby steps. A couple of really big examples is on the iPhone, Apple backtracked on the display for the iPhone 13. A big news story, at least in tech circles, was that after the iPhone 13 came out and people started doing teardowns and, you know, investigations as to what repairs are like on that device, they found that the display contains a chip. And apparently, if you swap the displays between iPhone 13s, because of that chip, and the chip is serialized to the motherboard in the phone, Face ID no longer works. Well, the display itself has nothing to do with Face ID. And ever since Face ID came out, and in fact, ever since Touch ID came out, it's always been known that the biometric sensor of whatever it is, fingerprint or Face ID, is tied to the motherboard. And you can't just swap a different one in. And there are legitimate security concerns for doing so. However, the display itself has absolutely nothing to do with that. Yet Apple got caught serializing the display and going further than they had before. For a while now, the displays have been serialized to the motherboards, but the only thing you would lose out on by swapping in a different display and not doing, you know, doing something like cloning the serial number or whatever to the new one is you'd lose out on like True Tone, right? And that was really just more of a nuisance thing to get people to, again, go through authorized repair because Apple wants to get that repair money. Now, Apple went a step further and just killed Face ID by having you swap out the display without going through their process. And that was a big deal. And Apple actually backtracked after hearing the outcry. And I think that was the point where Apple decided, okay, we need to pull off this self-service repair thing because otherwise it is going to get to a point where they'll get legislated into doing so. And a bunch of requirements that they don't want are probably going to get pushed down on them. The only bit of update that I've at least found ever since this PR article, this press release from Apple came out about the self-service repair program was just one kind of small update from an Apple spokesperson saying that they had supposedly been working on this program for over a year. I'm calling BS on that. I think that's a complete lie because of a couple of reasons. One, the timing is very suspect. You're at where what's starting to become kind of the peak of the right to repair movement. It's been building up momentum, but a lot more people are becoming aware of it and they're becoming more vocal to the point where kind of the common consumer is starting to understand what right to repair is about. And it's beyond computers too. Remember, this is not just a computer thing. This is not just an Apple thing. This is all technology. Right. It involves cars and involves like literally farm tractors and stuff, because apparently John Deere is just as bad and sometimes even worse than Apple when it comes to repairing that kind of equipment. So farmers are just up in arms to the point where they're even buying vintage equipment. They're not buying brand new tractors or, you know, farm implements anymore. They're buying old stuff. And the price of the old stuff has gone up dramatically because you can actually repair it. This is beyond just a technology and Apple kind of a thing. So the timing of when this came out really just kind of makes you go, huh, especially hot on the heels of the whole iPhone 13 debacle with that screen replacement. Now, that said, I do believe that it's something Apple has been thinking about heading in that direction, or at least trying to make some minor improvements to the repairability. For example, traditionally, on Apple's laptops from the last several years, the batteries have been glued into the top case. Like, you know, the lithium ion packs have very strong adhesive that hold them to the underside of the palm rest in the computer because the top case is all one milled piece of aluminum. And it's been notoriously difficult to replace the batteries in those computers, not just because there's a lot of parts you have to take out of the computer to get access to that battery, but the battery itself is so firmly adhered in that even Apple, when they do a battery replacement on something like a MacBook, they won't pry the old battery out and stick a new one in. They just straight up replace the top case. They basically pull your screen off. They pull the bottom panel off, of course. They pull your motherboard out and slap it all into a new chassis. So you're getting a new keyboard and sometimes even new trackpad too, just because that's so much easier for them to do. Well, the debate rages about whether this newest development was to make things easier and cheaper for Apple, or whether this was kind of a step in the direction to accommodate this self-service repair program. But on the new 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pros, the batteries are held in with adhesive still, but it's those stretchy adhesive tabs that can be removed. It's a lot like that 3M Command adhesive strips, if you've ever used those, where if they've got like a little tab on the end, and if you pull it, the entire thing stretches and ends up releasing clean from both surfaces. So it's strong adhesive. It does the job, but it's easy, in quotation marks, to remove. And this is something they've been doing on iPhones for years, because obviously you're going to be replacing the battery in your phone pretty frequently just because of use. I mean, batteries are the next most common thing, I think, to get replaced in phones. I'm not sure what's number one, number two between replacing a broken screen and replacing a dying battery, but those two are like the top two. So of course, Apple is going to want to optimize that process for iPhones just because of how many there are out there. But now the 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pros have batteries that can be removed without replacing the entire top case, which is good, because otherwise, could you imagine what the part cost would be for a complete top case assembly with new battery? Probably, I'm going to guess, something like $500-$600. If you work for an Apple authorized service provider, I'd be curious if you can let me know what your cost is on that and how close I am to that mark. But, you know, the fact that you're buying the top case with the keyboard, which Apple still unfortunately rivets into place, that is not a replaceable part, at least not yet. I mean, that's an expensive piece. And if you're Apple doing it yourself, well, of course, you've come up with ways to optimize on the back end how the refurbishment process for all that goes. No doubt they've got special tools and procedures for pulling the batteries out of top cases and slapping new ones in to turn them around as refurbished repair parts. But still, it is telling that Apple is starting to make some moves in that direction. Now, of course, upgradability and component level repair on devices is still going to be an issue, right? Like if a single RAM chip on your MacBook Pro motherboard dies, you're looking at an entirely new motherboard, unless you happen to be skilled at doing component level repair, like micro soldering, working under a microscope, hot air reflow, all that kind of stuff, which is the sort of thing that the typical self-service repair individual who goes through that program is not going to be able to do. I mean, that's as much as people love to talk about doing component level repair for devices, like, you know, you drop your phone in the lake and it fries and you need to get your pictures off of it. So someone has to swap the chips between, you know, your phone's motherboard and a donor logic board and all that kind of stuff. Like the number of places that can do that kind of repair is still relatively small. And the number of people who understand that that kind of repair can be done, given the right tools and specialized knowledge and talent, is still fairly small. So people who do self-service repair, they're going to go after kind of the easy parts. It is interesting to see that in that press release, Apple says that the parts store is going to offer more than 200 parts and tools. So that does suggest that you will get some of the more esoteric stuff available. It's not literally just going to be screens and batteries. There's going to be some more stuff. So if the motherboard in your MacBook dies, you can probably buy a new one. If the trackpad dies, you can probably buy a new one. If you need to do some, you know, more low-level repairs, like the vibration motor in your phone dies, you could probably buy a new one of those, you know, that kind of stuff. The big question, though, also is how much will the tools cost? And will Apple charge for access to the repair manuals, or will that just become available for free? And then also some of the specialty software, right? Like if you buy an Apple legit replacement screen, are they going to give you access to the tool to serialize it, you know, to pair that new screen's serial number to the motherboard in your phone so that True Tone continues to work? And how will that work? Because by making that tool available, suddenly now you potentially could open up the process for people to use third-party parts. And third-party parts are going to be yet another interesting wrinkle in this whole process, because some people will say that Apple is doing this as in a way to kill off third-party replacement parts, like generic parts that people have made. And generic parts exist for these devices for two reasons. Either because, one, they can be made less expensively, or sold rather less expensively than original manufacturer parts, or because it's difficult, if not impossible, to buy original parts. Like, if you don't have access to an authorized repair, you know, depot where you can order these parts directly from Apple, like, where else are you going to get a legit screen? Now, some authorized service providers have been known to kind of on the side sell replacement parts. And this is something I've got a little bit of firsthand knowledge of, because way back in, what was it, 2015, 2016, when the video card in my 2011 iMac failed, I had to go down that repair path of how do I deal with this? I'm not going to repeat the story, but basically Apple wouldn't touch the machine. So I took it to the Genius Bar, and for various reasons, they said that they wouldn't repair it even if I paid them. So my choices came down to, do I try to do the repair myself, or do I go to a third-party service provider and have them do it? Well, ultimately, I ended up having a third-party provider do the work for me because it was cheaper, both parts and labor. And this was an Apple-authorized place than if I were to go and try and find the part myself. But I did look that up, and just the part alone was probably 50% higher than what I paid parts and labor for the shop to do the work. No doubt that was because the service provider that was on the side selling those parts on eBay had some additional inherent risk, because if they were found out, if Apple realized that they were turning and flipping these parts to sale to the general public, they could lose their status as being authorized. So the pricing of the parts that Apple makes available to consumers is going to play a big part in whether the aftermarket parts ecosystem continues to thrive like it has been. I mean, you can buy replacement iPhone screens. Some of them are generic parts that have been manufactured new by a third party and may or may not have good quality. And this is ostensibly what Apple's most worried about, right? They don't want a whole bunch of iPhones out there that have replacement screens where the screens look like trash. They want to maintain their high level of quality out there because it's all a PR thing for them, right? If you're thinking about switching to an iPhone and your friend has an iPhone and you look at it and the screen looks like trash, but you don't ask them, you know, hey, did you replace the screen? Has it always looked this bad or whatever? And the screen, you know, and the friend admits, oh yeah, no, I dropped it a year ago and cracked the original screen, and this is some just cheap knockoff that I put in there to get me by. If you don't ask them that, you're going to look at the phone and go, wow, Apple puts crap screens in their devices. You're not going to understand. And to some extent, you know, I think it makes sense for Apple to take that kind of angle. A lot of companies do that, trying to protect their reputation. And there's, you know, some legitimate concern for it. But at the same time, if you price the replacement parts so high that third-party parts, even if they're inferior quality, become a more compelling option for people, you're not doing as much as you can to try to preserve your own reputation. So I think the repair part price is going to be a big factor. And I'm a little worried that Apple will actually price these parts too low, because that is something they could do. They could realize that, you know what? We've got an opportunity here to kill off the third-party manufacturers or the refurbishers of parts, because that's another good source for things like screens. is if it's just the top glass on the screen that's broken and the panel itself underneath is fine. There are plenty of refurbishing companies, most of them in China, that will disassemble the entire thing. They've got the tools and the skills to peel all the old glass off of the LCD or OLED panel and put a new piece of glass on the front. So you're still getting the original screen quality, but now the glass isn't broken anymore. And of course, that can save you some money. Apple wants to kind of kill that off too, because, you know, what if the quality of the glass is crap? Or what if the digitizer layer that they're sticking on there doesn't work quite as well? Or, you know, whatever. Or like we said, because Apple would just be losing out on money, you know, from getting the repair done themselves anyway, if someone were to take it in. Apple could actually sell its authorized parts at a loss and effectively kill off that ecosystem, the entire cottage industry of third-party or refurbished phone parts and Mac parts. Obviously, there are a lot more phone parts out there than Mac parts just because of the volume of devices that have been sold. But if Apple wanted to do so, they could. That's dangerous, though, because now Apple's even in tighter control of independent repair, right? Now, I mean, it's a good thing in that now these parts are cheap. And they're accessible, and you can buy the good quality stuff for a compelling price. So at an individual consumer level, it's a great deal if that were to happen. But at the same time, now Apple is solely in control of it, and they can decide what parts they want to sell and when they want to sell them. And one of the biggest questions is, how long will Apple make these parts available? There's no indication that Apple is going to make stuff available for machines that are older than like now, right? Like at the beginning of this, we said iPhone 12 and 13 plus any Apple Silicon Macs. How long are parts going to be available going into the future, right? Is it going to follow Apple's vintage and obsolete list? Apple keeps a list of all of its products, and after a certain number of years, it says, okay, well, we consider this device vintage or we consider it obsolete. Those are two different things. And availability of parts and repair varies based on, you know, what status that particular device is in. How long that is generally depends on the device, but the number that sticks in my head kind of on average is about 7 years, at least for Macs. For phones, I think it's a little bit shorter than that. But is Apple going to follow that list? Like 6 years from now, can you still buy a replacement screen for an iPhone 13? Or is it more going to follow like the AppleCare period, where, you know, after about 3 years or so, you're done? And maybe that's the point where Apple says, well, you know, if it breaks after 3 years, you probably should just buy a new one. Depending on the device, that may or may not make sense, but that's a big unknown. By not offering parts for older devices, Apple's really only helping itself, because those are the devices that, statistically speaking, are probably going to be in most need of replacement parts, not just due to accident damage, right? Because the longer of a period of time you use a device, the more likely you are to break it in one way or another, but also just by internal component failure, things like flash chips wearing out. I mean, the storage on pretty much all of Apple's machines now is soldered to the motherboard. And so if even a single flash chip were to wear out or fail, that can affect the operation and stability of the product. And since you can't just take that storage off the board and stick a new one in there, you know, go to the store and buy a new M.2 SSD, you're looking at an entire motherboard replacement. So obviously, the longer the computer or device is in use, the more likely it's going to need a repair. But Apple can be opportunistic and say, well, you know, it's been 4 years, but we've got all these new computers. Maybe you should just buy one of those instead. And even if they don't do it by not offering the part, there's also nothing that will dictate what the prices of the parts they sell will be long term. In general, supply and demand, right? You look at it, and unless there's a run on a part, like a known issue with a specific device, whether that's a car or a computer or other piece of technology that manifests itself at a certain time. In technology circles, we consider this the bathtub curve, right? Where if you look at the cross section of a bathtub, it's high on the left side and then it drops down to the bottom of the tub for a while and then it goes up on the right side. And that's generally the way failures work with technology, is you've got the whole so-called infant mortality of it, where you just take it out of the box and it's dead on arrival, or after a week or 2 weeks, it fails, or, you know, even a couple of months, it just fails for whatever reason. And that's generally due to just a part that wasn't manufactured correctly, right? It was a design flaw, or maybe something went wrong in the manufacturing process that caused that part to fail early. It just happens. And that's what warranties are for. But at the other end of it, you've got where the device has been in use for a certain amount of time and parts just wear out or fail on their own due to some other kind of contributing factor. And so you can end up in a situation where you start to reach that end of the bathtub curve, and maybe the device is still perfectly usable for you, right? Like if you drive an older car, I mean, if it still gets you from point A to point B, why would you really need a new one? Unless you're at that point in the bathtub curve where you're throwing so many parts at that device or vehicle or whatever that financially it doesn't make sense to continue to do that. Instead, you should just go buy a new car. Generally, when it comes to parts, unless you end up with some sort of known issue where after X number of years, this part is known to fail, and so a bunch of people reach that point kind of around the same time and parts become scarce, unless that's the factor. In general, the price of parts goes down over time just because of supply and demand. But naturally, people are going to want to upgrade, right? How many people out there are still rocking a 7-year-old MacBook Pro? Well, I mean, definitely fewer than people who originally bought them. And yeah, they're still going to be out there. But because there's less demand, as people just want to naturally upgrade, right? I mean, yeah, maybe the 7-year-old MacBook Pro still works, but it's 7 years old and you want a new one because a new one is faster, offers better features, whatever. So just naturally, the installed base is going to decline, which is why you see fewer older cars on the road than you see newer cars. It's just always been the way it is. So the parts are going to get less expensive over time, because they're sitting on shelves and they're not moving and there are fewer people out there who want to buy them. But Apple may not see it that way. Apple may keep parts prices high artificially over time as an incentive to get people to upgrade. So yeah, Apple may make a screen available for an iPhone 13 6 years from now, but it may be just as expensive as it would be when they first started selling that part. At that point, it doesn't necessarily make sense to repair, right? Because it's a 6 year, by that point, it would be like a 6-year-old phone. And if you're dropping, let's just say the part costs $300, which I think would be an extreme price for a replacement display, but Apple could probably do it. In fact, I think that's probably what they will charge for like a regular iPhone 13 OLED panel. 6 years from now, $300 for a brand new replacement screen for a 6-year-old device that's probably even no longer supported by iOS at that point, like you would have stopped getting updates, that's nuts. No one would do that. So even the people who that device would still work for them, they're going to be pushed to upgrade just because of the repair part prices. And that's really the big risk of having a single company be in charge of all of those parts and having, in one way or another, gotten rid of the third-party part industry. By squeezing out all those independent manufacturers that make generic or replacement parts, effectively, the manufacturer has dictated the usable lifetime of those devices. I mean, imagine if you are into classic cars and, you know, you've got a vehicle that's 40, 50 years old. The original manufacturer likely doesn't make all the parts for that anymore. And new old stock parts are going to become rare, right? You can't just walk into the dealer and be like, yeah, I want a new crate motor for this vehicle or whatever. In some cases you can, because maybe some of those parts are interchangeable with other models and there's enough demand. But some of the more esoteric parts are not available anymore. Without that third-party industry to make replacements, a lot of those things are gone. And if the device still does what you need, or if you're locked into that device for some specific reason. And something that comes to mind is like industrial control computers. There are a surprising number of like 486 and Pentium machines out there still running Windows 3.1 or Windows 95 or even DOS to make these big hundreds of thousands of dollars or $1 million like industrial devices work, whether they're CNCs or other manufacturing equipment. Because the manufacturer that makes that equipment, they just want you to buy a whole new device at that giant cost. They're not going to be all that often being like, okay, well, you know, here's a new version of the software and you can run it on a modern computer and keep your 30-year-old piece of equipment going. I mean, I think it would be smart if they did that, but most of them don't. So there's actually a bit of an industry out there for retro computer parts just for those people. And people are coming up with ways to try to extend the life of those devices. Hard drives are going to fail, and you can't buy new IDE hard drives really anymore. So finding adapters that can go from like IDE to compact flash is a big deal. Thankfully, in that era, all the parts in those computers generally are going to be industry standard. We know Apple has pretty much said screw it to industry standards at this point. Other than like USB-C on the side of their computers, all the parts inside, good luck, right? They're bespoke. And other manufacturers have done the same thing, right? You can't take the motherboard out of a Google phone and drop it into a Samsung phone or even individual components like that. Everything has become much more bespoke over time. So, you know, it's going to have knock-on effects. And speaking of Samsung and Google and the other manufacturers, will this spur them into doing their own repair store, you know, parts stores like this? I think it will. Now, Samsung has generally sold parts, but I don't think they've sold all of them, or at least made it easy for you to get access to them. This may be an opportunity for some manufacturers, and this really could be kind of a bright spot in that it could actually spur competition between manufacturers on this level. We know some manufacturers are willing to butt heads over damn near anything, right? Like the rivalry between Apple and Samsung is so fierce. One company does a new feature that does a certain thing. The other one is certain to follow. What if Samsung, for example, were to decide, you know what? This could be a compelling thing for us to pursue, but we're going to do it better than Apple. We're going to, you know, cut the parts price, or we're going to make them easier to access, or we're going to make the tools be free, or, you know, come with the part, right? Instead of selling you just the display and then selling you a separate kit of tools to take the display off the phone, what if we just bundle it all together in one kit, save you some money, give you everything you need, plus the instructions? By the way, this is exactly like what iFixit kind of does, and I'm a little worried about them because selling tools and parts is how they make their money, but they'll probably still be fine anyway. But what if it spurs competition between manufacturers to try and outdo each other when it comes to like self-service repair and making parts available? Well, that could be really compelling. And what if it goes a step further, right? What if they actually say, you know, okay, yeah, so Apple sells you all these parts to fix your iPhone, but it's still a pain in the ass to do it. Hey, look at how easy it is to take our phones apart. And ostensibly, that is already the case. I've done a video about replacing the battery in a Samsung Galaxy S7. And honestly, I think that repair was fairly easy. Once you got through the adhesive holding the back glass on, it was just a bunch of standard screws to get the old battery out and slap a new one in and be done. That really wasn't too painful. But what if it could be even easier? What if that back cover somehow snapped on and still maintained water resistance? Oh, that'd be really compelling because now you don't have to worry about breaking your phone in the process of trying to take it apart, or at least it would reduce the risk. That would be another interesting frontier, I think, for manufacturers to start competing on, almost to come full circle about, look at how easy it is to work on our products. Would that be a major selling feature? No, I don't think so. But it would be a compelling one for them to pursue, especially if they can manage to reconcile that with all of the other objectives they have for their devices, you know, being thin and light and sleek and powerful and waterproof and all the other things that like a phone or a laptop or whatever would have as a selling feature. I think this is a great opportunity for the industry as a whole. And obviously it's going to send a message to non-computer industries as well, because Apple is like the biggest tech manufacturer out there. And if even they're willing to do this, after how anti-consumer, anti-right to repair they've been, other manufacturers, like I'm going to be eyeballing John Deere. Like, are they going to follow suit or are they going to try and stand up? And no, we're still going to lock our stuff down and force legislation. Oh, we'll see. But I also think this is a great opportunity for other manufacturers to compete in a good way by making these parts available. Regardless of where you get them from, it's only going to help improve the reliability and repairability of products because it's getting those parts out into the ecosystem. It's normalizing self-repair again. That's a skill that I think we've really lost kind of culturally. We keep shifting more and more towards this concept of just getting someone else to do that kind of stuff for us. And I'll be honest, I've engaged in that too. I don't necessarily hands-on repair every single thing of mine. Like the last time my phone needed a battery in it. And this is something I never did a video or I even think a podcast about. But so that Galaxy S7 was my phone for my day job, my work phone, a second phone, and the battery swelled up in it after a couple of years and I replaced it. And that's what I did the video about. After the battery swelled up in that phone, because of its age, I decided to just get a new phone anyway. So the S7 became a spare. It's not like it went unused or anything like that. But I ended up getting another Galaxy phone. I got an S10. And after a year and a half, the battery in that phone swelled up. Now, I'm realizing that part of it, I think, is due to usage of the device. Where if you leave it on the charger all the time and what have I been doing for the last 18 months? I've been working from home, so I haven't really been carrying the phone around with me so much like I would if I was actually in the office, walking around the building and everything like that. It's been sitting on the charger, and Samsung devices, and I guess just Android devices in general, don't do as good of a job with battery management. So the battery in my S10 started to swell up. I ended up just taking it into Best Buy and having them do an authorized repair on it. So it was a legit Samsung battery that went into it, Samsung authorized repair. And in the S7 repair video, I had talked about how it was overly expensive for me to have them repair the S7 because of its age. I asked them the actual same questions about the S10 when I brought it in, because I was apprehensive. I figured they'd give me the same line about, oh, well, you know, we have to replace all these other parts because of OLED burn-in and all that kind of stuff. And Samsung makes us refurbish it back to original condition and all that. Because of how relatively new my S10 was at the time, none of that was a factor. And they charged me all of $40 to put a new battery in it. So I literally just dropped it off, went out, ran some other errands, came back a couple hours later, and my phone was done. And they did a good job. So it's, you know, I don't think having other people do repairs for you is necessarily a bad thing, because honestly, it was faster and probably cheaper for me to just have them do it than for me to spend the time to do it myself. But it will, I think, by having these parts available, normalize some of those repairs again. So that if, you know, say a part in one of my other devices were to fail and it wasn't necessarily time sensitive for me to fix, like, you know, maybe it doesn't debilitate the device or whatever, right? I'm looking at like my 13-inch MacBook Pro. You know, what if, or any laptop, you know, what if one of the USB-C ports fails, but not both of them? So I can still charge the laptop. It's still usable. It's just not completely functional. Well, you know, and a lot of laptops, those ports are on a separate board. They're not necessarily soldered to the motherboard. At least I hope they won't be. So I could, you know, put an order in for one of those parts and just wait for it to show up and swap it at my convenience. No big deal. Instead of making a Genius Bar appointment, taking it in, dropping the laptop off, waiting a day or two or more for them to replace the part and get it back to me, during which time I don't have access to the device. So long story short, this whole self-service repair program, while I do think it's in some ways a knee-jerk reaction on Apple's part, and I'm skeptical about what Apple's ulterior motive is to this, they say, oh, this is a great opportunity to help people out and all that. At the same time, they do make it very clear in the press release that it's not intended for the average person to engage in. And that's what I'm kind of concerned about. Like, here's the relevant line from the press release. I'm going to read it verbatim. Self-service repair is intended for individual technicians with the knowledge and experience to repair electronic devices. for the vast majority of consumers, visiting a professional repair provider with certified technicians who use genuine Apple parts is the safest and most reliable way to get a repair. Apple's making it very clear that this is not the beginning of some sort of, hey, you can do it yourself kind of movement. Regardless of what the pretty little pictures in this press release of showing a woman sitting at her kitchen counter fixing the screen on her iPhone may suggest, this is generally just something I think that will get Apple out in front of legislation, but hopefully spur a bit more discussion about this topic and maybe make that scenario of someone sitting at their kitchen counter fixing their own device a bit more plausible. As always, thanks for listening.